It's time for our weekly catch-up with National MP Ryan Hamilton.
More than 200 scientists, researchers and water professionals were involved in the development of a water research roadmap, offering the government 20 priorities for development in the water sector. Minister responsible for RMA reform Chris Bishop and Minister for Agriculture Todd McClay reported on their updated national direction for natural hazards across New Zealand last week as the government seeks public feedback on their resource management plan through the Planning Bill and the Natural Environment Bill. This all comes as the United Nations shared a bleak report on the era of global water bankruptcy, in which they say that many water systems are being chronically and unsustainably overused to the threat of global water security. I spoke to National MP Ryan Hamilton about all of these topics, starting with water sector priorities in Aotearoa. Water New Zealand have released a roadmap to installing a number of priorities in the sector related to infrastructure, governance and innovation. Have you had a chance to read through their proposals and what are your thoughts on the feasibility of their goals?
No, I haven't seen Water New Zealand's stuff. Yeah, no, I can only really talk to some of our policy statements around the natural hazards and some of the work we're doing, but obviously excited to see the rollout of the Local Water Done Well program, and obviously the uptake of that this year will be significant across councils as they start to manage the water assets and infrastructure.
Yeah, well, I mean, on that point, what are some of the National Party's priorities surrounding New Zealand's water infrastructure over the longer term?
Obviously before Christmas, we just released the National Policy Statement for Natural Hazards, and that sets a consistent risk-based approach on how councils will manage natural hazard risks in areas such as flooding, storms and erosions. Is obviously those have become quite pertinent in the last few years with Cyclone Gabrielle and some of the flooding through Auckland. But it's also to try and ensure that there's a more consistent, proportionate approach across the country, because obviously a lot of the, the way we dealt with those things over decades has sort of been inconsistent and a bit different. So we're trying to create a bit more of a framework to manage those things, knowing that they're potentially going to happen a lot more frequently as well.
Yeah, you've mentioned before about repealing the three waters and replacing it with local water well done. How has this plan been going and how have the intended outcomes been tracking during this term?
Yeah, so the uptake was really good. So 44 councils have chosen a CCO model and 23 have opted for staying in-house. But that means that effectively 76% of New Zealand's population is now going to have an amended approach to water. And so that transition, I mean, it's, you know, even under the previous administration, I guess it started to shift the conversation around how we manage water infrastructure. But with local water done well, it provides the certainty now so that those frameworks or mechanisms are locked in. And this year will all be about transitioning the water assets into those separate entities, well, with the ones that are CCOs anyway. But what it will do is I think it's going to create a lot more transparency around the state of New Zealand's three waters infrastructure, drinking, waste and stormwater, because a lot of that stuff obviously was, I guess, a sleeping giant across the country where assets in the ground are often not seen or the life or the longevity of them is sort of hidden until suddenly there's a problem. So it'll bring a lot more transparency to the life management, asset management of those, how we fund and finance them. So obviously with the new arrangements, those entities can borrow up to twice as much. But because they're such generational assets, so over 20 to 30 years, that debt makes sense. Similar to like when we have a mortgage, the impact spread over a longer period of time. But there'll be a lot of conversations, I think, around the country through things like water meters, which will also provide a lot more transparency to, you know, the individual user, but as well as how we use and manage our water as a community.
Over the last year, the government has had a few consultation periods in terms of resource management policy decisions and around water policy as well. Last year, a number of groups, including the National Iwi Chairs Forum, Freshwater Sciences Society and Te Uru Kahika, submitted a statement accusing the government of siding with narrow commercial rather than community interests on freshwater policy. Has this feedback been incorporated into National's policy decisions most recently in freshwater needs?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be a range of views on water use. I mean, we've certainly had a lot of feedback from the agricultural and farming sector as well, where in some cases farms have been, having water storage or wanting to renew resource consents on water usage, and for something that they might have been doing for 15 or 20 years, and all of a sudden it's getting stymied with red tape with regional councils and for things that have been effectively status quo. And so whilst we're sort of managing, I guess, a large macro reform, we try to provide certainty in some of those instances to say that we will roll those over while the transitional period takes place. And once that period's taken place, we hope it's going to provide a lot more certainty to both the users of the water, but also those wider stakeholders, so iwi and other forums that you've mentioned, environmental groups, etc. But the whole thing is just to provide more clarity to all parties, because there's been so much ambiguity across different policy statements and interpretation in the RM that it has created, you know, a lot of confusion and frustration.
Can you go a bit further into explaining the changes that have been made most recently to the National Direction for Natural Hazard Risk Management?
Yeah, so I guess the changes that we've talked about in that policy statement are to try and set a more consistent risk-based approach for how councils manage those. So, and for example, last, so it would be 2024, the Finance and Expenditure Committee did a relatively bipartisan look across all the various parties involved on climate mitigation and climate adaption frameworks. And that was to try and create a framework of mitigate, manage, sequencing, because we saw that different regional councils in particular would have different challenges and issues, whether they're a coastal community council or an inland community council. And so this policy statement is to try and create a more proportionate, consistent approach right across the country. So I guess we're using similar language, we're using similar mechanisms to manage or mitigate. So that's obviously a new instrument, but it's also designed so that when the RMA reforms are completed later this year, it'll integrate with that as well. So you're not kind of having, you know, the stop-start of documents not talking to each other.
One of the priorities I wanted to highlight from the Water New Zealand Roadmap report was that of climate resilience in New Zealand, especially in the coming years. How do these changes, or how does the current national direction around natural hazard risks and water policy, I suppose, align with this priority?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, I haven't seen the water report, but I mean, one of the things that I think, if I took an anecdote from the Prime Minister's address yesterday in terms of the state of the nation, he said, "There's, you know, we can only control what we can control." And so there's obviously, you know, there's some global challenges around water scarcity and those sorts of things, but we've actually got to manage our own resources well. And so I think this framework sets us up internally to look at how we manage it in the context of, you know, a changing climate, efficient water usage, and those sorts of things. And potentially, as we develop that framework up, that'll be something that we can share with neighbouring countries, and vice versa. We can take some of their learnings, and especially, you know, with increases in population and animal management. So I think there's a lot to learn from each other in that, but I think we've certainly got a lot of work within our own backyard, if you like, that we've got to tidy up.
The Planning Bill and Natural Environments Bill are currently seeking public submissions in Parliament. Can you talk a little bit about what these will influence in New Zealand in relation to water policy and how people can get involved and have their say?
Yeah, so I think the submissions, I think we extended it to about the 12th of February, just because obviously the holiday period, and particularly with big stakeholders and councils away over the Christmas period, and we wanted a meaningful engagement. So obviously we're under no illusion that what's gone out, well, you know, we are seeking genuine improvements. We want to avoid unintended consequences. But these are, you know, some of the most significant reforms we will see. And, I mean, there was talk as to whether it could be one document rather than the two bills you mentioned, but I think the sense was, one, the planning bill focuses on, you know, what a developer can do in terms of constraints around planning laws, zoning areas where they can and can't do certain things. And obviously the Natural Environment Bill, more specifically around what are the impacts and how they're mitigated, but to try and find a lot more certainty for all parties. One of the great phrases that I'd heard as I sit on the Environment Committee under the RMA was called sustainable management. But of course, sustainable management can mean many things to many people. And what we've had is, you know, a lot of consultants, whenever there's a development, consultants will put forward a review, and then councils or regulators will get an alternative view, and then those reviews get peer reviewed, and it becomes this very subjective, challenging pathway. So both of the bills are designed to work together, but also to try and remove some of the ambiguity. And effectively what that means is, with ambiguity, it just means time, delay, cost, and it actually ultimately New Zealanders pay for it through loss of productivity or higher costs for goods and services.
Finally, I just wanted to zoom out into the bigger picture for this last question. The United Nations is inviting world leaders to facilitate honest, science-based adaptation to a new reality following what they've announced is the dawn of an era of global water bankruptcy. How would you like to see the National Party's plan surrounding water usage or its contribution to international negotiations in the space be influenced by this latest report?
I think our Minister Simon Watts is in that space in terms of Minister of Energy and Climate Change. I think he's doing an incredible job at trying to find and navigate that sort of pragmatic pathway forward. And I think, to my earlier point, whilst we're seeing these issues spread out across the world, there's certainly a lot of challenges just locally in our own rohe. And so I think as we progress this RM reform, the water management systems over the next 3 to 5 years, hopefully there's some learnings that we'll also be able to share with the rest of the world in terms of, you know, good stewardship and management of our water resources. But also I'm sure there'll be many learnings that we can take. So I think it'll be an evolving dynamic experience for us all, but hopefully we can not reinvent the wheel and learn from each other.
That was National Party MP Ryan Hamilton talking about water sector priorities, natural hazards and climate resilience in New Zealand.
That was our weekly chat with National MP Ryan Hamilton.